this week's Adam Schefter podcast, in the same week as the NBA draft, we'll be joined by the great NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. He'll lend some insight into where LeBron James might wind up, discuss the upcoming free agent summer, and we'll compare and contrast our notes on what it's like to be an insider for the NFL and the NBA. Without further ado, my friend, Adrian Wojnarowski.
All right, Woj, we're going to try to get through the next 20, 30 minutes without too many interruptions, without the phone going off. It already went off before we started to do this.
Yep.
So we'll see if anything happens here with LeBron or Durant or Kawhi Leonard or anything that we're working on, you're working on here for this upcoming podcast. First of all, I should thank you for this actual podcast, because without you, this would not be happening right now. This would not be in existence.
May have been my greatest contribution so far to ESPN.
Well, I doubt that, but I can honestly say that when we had dinner a couple of years ago, roughly, right, you said you really should do a podcast. And nobody had suggested that to me at this time, and the company wasn't interested in having me do a podcast. So,
you twisted some arms here?
No, with your pushing and backing, I went to some people and I said, well, maybe we should try a podcast. And so here we are.
And this might be the demise of it this week, but all your NFL followers going, what is this about?
Well, I'll tell you what this is about. First of all, I have the greatest NBA newsman on. That's number one. I have my good friend on, my consultant, my fellow advisor, my psychologist, all those things. And we have you on in the week of the NBA draft.
Yep.
So what other time is there to get on, my friend, than in the week of the NBA draft, right before free agency, to talk about what this experience would be like? I also should mention that you're being honored as the National Sports Writer of the Year on June 25th in Salisbury, North Carolina. So congratulations to you on that tremendous award. That, you ever want a more meaningful award than that?
Well, yeah, I think meaningful, but it's when you look at the list of winners, like you go, which one's not like the others? I mean, like guys I grew up idolizing who, you know, a lot of icons of the industry, don't know that I fit in with them, but I'm honored by it. And, yeah, but it is draft. Well, it'll be the week after the draft for free agency. But my draft week is, the NBA draft is so much different than the NFL draft, only because I think the walk-up on the NFL draft is because there's such a vacuum of time, right, where there's post-Super Bowl, where it is the story, where the NBA draft sort of kind of sneaks up on people on the heels of the playoffs. It's different.
So, Woj, you've been at ESPN for almost a year now. This will be your first NBA draft. What do you envision this being like for you?
Well, what's been great so far, and we've done a lot of, you know, I think we've built out some more programming, draft shows, and then having Jonathan Givony, Mike Schmitz at ESPN. I mean, the two preeminent draft experts in the world who know the college game, know the international game, have watched over a very long period of time, almost everybody in this draft. And the international players, you know, they've charted Luka Doncic since he was, you know, he's 19 now. They've been on him since he was 15, 16 years old. Having those guys is tremendous. But then being able to work with, you know, Jay Billis, I've gotten to know him a lot better here through this. And he's been just incredible, like welcoming into their group. And it'll be a lot of fun. It's to me, I think there's going to be a lot of action and trade. I think there's going to be some trades up in the lottery. I think there's going to be a lot of moving around. I think teams value guys. It's such different. There's not a great consensus after the first, really after one, there's not a consensus. So I think there'll be some teams trying to get up higher and some teams trying to get out. So to me, that's always the fun part of the trades and teams targeting guys, trying to get up to get them. And then you've got it right on the heels of free agency, which comes just, you know, a little over a week later, which is anytime LeBron's involved, it's a huge free agency market and period.
Best guess today, best guess on where LeBron's going.
I don't want to guess. I
hate guessing as a reporter.
Yeah, I just think that this is the most complicated decision he's had in some ways, and maybe in the end he knew all along. Maybe this will be one where he's known all along. I know L.A. makes a lot of sense to people from a perspective bigger than just basketball of kind of planting his flag out in Hollywood and all of those things. There's not an obvious, if I sign and go here, we are set up to win championships or to catch Golden State. Golden State has complicated everybody's thought process, whether it's LeBron's, Paul George, Houston, Oklahoma City, the money that they're, the financial commitment that it's taking to try to compete with that Golden State roster, the luxury tax that Houston's probably going to have to pay, that Oklahoma City's going to pay if Paul George stays and Carmelo Anthony opts back in. It's remarkable how much the Warriors have changed the league. They changed it the way they play, style of play, shooting threes and the way they built it out stylistically, but they've changed it from a business as a business model. And then Golden State's got a lot of really tough questions, in terms of salary and how much do they want to, how much luxury tax do they want to pay? How deep into the tax do they want to go? Can they pay everybody and keep this thing together long term? They've got tough decisions to make too coming up. Not this year, but maybe starting next year.
Who would be the first Warrior to leave of that group, if you had to guess? And again, I'm asking you to guess again, which I shouldn't be doing because I don't like when people ask me to guess, because when you guess, all of a sudden it becomes a headline. Well, Woj says that LeBron's going to L.A. or Klay Thompson's leaving the Warriors. But if there's one Warrior that you would guess.
Well, I think it's going to depend on who's willing to take. To keep this together, they've all got to take, well, there's going to have to be a discount. Now, Steph Curry took the full max after he was very underpaid. You know, he was on a four-year, $44 million deal. There were times a couple years ago where he was the fifth highest paid player on the floor because he had signed his first extension when he was having the ankle injuries. And I remember at the time people thought, geez, that's a lot for Steph Curry. He's got these, could have a career-ending injury. Why are they paying him $11 million a year? But I think Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are going to have to take less if they both want to stay. I think Klay seems open to it, and I'm not saying Draymond isn't, but it's, you just can't pay everybody. And if those guys want max contracts, it'll be harder. It'll be harder to keep it together. It's really interesting because Durant has taken less here in a couple of these one-year deals to allow them to keep Iguodala, Sean Livingston, to allow them to keep some of those role players. And that's sometimes when the star player does that, it sets the precedent for the rest of the group. But, you know, we're still a year out from having those guys having to make those decisions on their contracts.
And this will be the summer of LeBron, and we started to talk about him. Here's what struck me. Again, I don't cover the NBA. I do it for fun. But when I'm reading his comments and listening to his comments then after the game where he's saying, I don't know what's going to happen, I haven't thought about it, I said to myself, if he's coming back to Cleveland, it's a very simple conversation to have. You just end the speculation right there. And he's never done that. He's never squashed it. He's never said, guys, why are we talking about this? Why is this a subject? I'm not going anywhere. He's never once said that, which is why I think the door is open and there is so much speculation on where he's going to wind up going.
No,
and
I
do think he's leaving.
Yeah, well, there's no question it's wide open. And last summer, they could have acquired Paul George. And I think Paul George wanted to know, well, if LeBron commits to some years going forward, then I might be willing to commit. And when LeBron wasn't willing to commit and commit to an extension, that told me, I mean, they could have had Paul George. They could have had, and they could have done that without losing Kyrie. It's a very different team. Kyrie Irving, Paul George, LeBron James. And so when he wasn't ready to do that then, you had to be, and Cleveland was worried, and rightly so. They don't want to get left again where they don't get anything for him, or they've loaded up on bad contracts to try to help to convince him to stay. They did take on more money in that Lakers trade, but they took on younger players who they, you know, in their minds could keep going forward without LeBron. But, you know, they've got the eighth pick in the draft. I think they're going to make that pick independent. they're not going to get direction from LeBron. He's not going to tell them, geez, I like this guy, I like that. Like, right. He's not going to give them direction. They're going to have to fly blind, and they'll pick the player there that makes sense, I think, without him. Like, they have to assume he's leaving, or they're going to be put in an even more difficult position. It's never easy to have him walk out the door, but they have contracts like Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith that they're stuck with. If he's gone and a team that's not really built to play around him, to play without him. And so, yeah, you're right. He could have made this if he wanted to be there, and if he was going to be there, he could have settled this. He hasn't. So it's obvious he's looking. That doesn't mean he won't stay, but they're going to have to sweat it out if he does.
We'll be back with more of my conversation with Woj in a second. But first, I need you to listen up, people. We've got a big favor to ask, and we promise it won't take up too much of your time. You know, our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors, right? Well, we'd love to hear your feedback. Head to ESPNPodcastStudy.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. That's it, we swear. Again, that's ESPNPodcastStudy.com.
So you've now been at ESPN, like we said, almost a year. What has been the one thing that is most surprising? Because I think a lot of people were surprised when you came to work here. You were a critic of the company, outspoken.
I was a competitor.
A competitor.
I was a competitor of the company.
That's a good way of saying it. Yeah. Okay, so you're a competitor.
Yeah.
And now you're on the team.
Yep.
What are your thoughts being on the team? Is it what you thought it would be?
You know, the second or third night I was here, second or third day in free agency, I remember saying to somebody, and I was saying it to myself, that I was proud of what we built outside of this structure and this monolith, and this platform is enormous, and it reaches people in lots of many more ways than I ever did before, and that I was proud of what, over the years, we had built outside of it. Because I appreciated that better once I was inside of ESPN, that it really is an advantage to be here if you work hard at it and do it. And then there's also times where, I don't want to say it's like, you said this to me before we started. You said, it's a little bit like going to the Yankees and no one's rooting for you. And there's some truth to that. And I accept all of it. Like, it's fine. Like, at the end of the day, it's an advantage to be here. There's no question. No one would ever convince me otherwise, and I think if you don't think it is, I think you're making excuses. But the platform and the reach, not just here, but globally, like, people watch you when they're pumping gas, right? Like, the 1 minute, I hear more people who say they watch me, I don't know what that says. I said, like, yeah, this year you're, you know, like, next year I'll be pumping your gas probably somewhere, but,
That's a good one. I'm going to steal that for the next time somebody says they saw me while they were pumping gas.
It won't be long, yeah.
Before you came here, we had had some conversations about what this might be like. Has it been what I told you it would be?
Almost exactly. Almost exactly. And I think in the way that you told me that there would be a lot of people who want to help and help you do well and are there to make it easier for you, and that's absolutely been the case. I mean, your responsibilities are different. Here, you're doing more television, you're going to sit for radio, you're doing, when you break a story, the responsibilities, like, in my, typically I would just be on to the next one, and I am mentally on to the next one, but you've got to kind of feed the beast in the interim, right, of you're going to do a number of sports centers that day, or get up, or
Golic and Wingo,
right, and so, which is great, and you're also mentally getting to the next one. I've just, the infrastructure is so good. I always had great editors, like at Yahoo, like, you know, Johnny Ludden, Joe Garza, and guys who, I always had great editors, like going back into newspapers. I think, like, of all the newspaper jobs I had, I was always blessed with, like, really good editors, having people you could count on, who were there to make you better, challenge you, also have your back. And that's been true here. Like, I did, like, Christina Douglas, who's our NBA digital editor. I didn't know her at all before we started, and she had moved over to basketball right July 1, and I came in, and Bobby Marks came in, and the draft guys came in shortly after, and like, lucky to have a great editor, and then to help you coordinate the digital and TV, and you've got, you know, Hillary Guy who works out of LA. They're not names people may know, but like, they make the thing go, and it's a great benefit to have people who, over time, they start to figure out your strengths, where you thrive, where you've got to work on, and putting you in situations where you'll hopefully do well. And so I've always found here that there's people who want to make sure you get in those right situations, and I appreciate that.
A support system, but they also leave you alone to do what you do.
Yes, and they've been really good about, like, if I just say, hey, listen, I need time to...
I'm working on something,
and not to be asked to go on when you... You know, to me, it's, like, really important to say, I don't know. And sometimes, and I get it, like, the shows want an answer. They want to, you know, we all have different roles here, and there's some people who are going to talk more in the abstract or hypotheticals, which is, that's sports. That's part of the conversation. I don't want to be in those situations, like the ones you just put me in earlier in the show. But I want to deal in fact and reporting.
Right.
I know, which I really watched how you did it. And I spent a lot of time on YouTube before I started, and even after I started, going back and watching how you frame news and how you, whether it was on air, well, obviously on air on YouTube, and then obviously watching you here and seeing how you went about sort of the, I could see where you would draw guidelines of where you would take analysis versus speculation, where you, and I've always tried to keep it pretty narrow, like, here's what I know. Here's what I know. Here's an informed idea of what could happen based on these facts, but not get too deep into speculation, because I think when people see us, they want to know, like, you know, there's an expectation of fact reporting and not hyperbole or not certainly not speculation.
No. Did you see my coughing fit? Did you study that one? I hope you didn't study that one.
I did see that one. We've all we're
it's
all
still playing on the Howard Stern show.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Every now and then, just like you have people who see you pumping gas while they're pumping gas, I've got people who say, hey, you were on the Howard Stern show today. I was. Oh, yeah. Well, it's a coughing fit. If you just Google Adam Schefter coughing fit, I guarantee you will crack up watching this.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a piece from my third week here when I was on with Sage Steele, and there was something caught my throat just as they were putting me on air at that very moment. She was asking about the Panthers quarterback situation, and I started to cough, and I tried to recover. And it was the beginning of my time there. It was so embarrassing and humiliating, and I'm glad that we can laugh about it now. But if you go Google Adam Schefter coughing fit, I guarantee you, don't study that clip when you're studying things to do. Study that clip when you want to know what not to do, Woj.
I've seen it.
What is it like for you? We talked about LeBron being back in Cleveland. What's it like for you, Woj, to be back in Bristol, where you're from this area? Your dad still lives here.
Yeah, my dad, my sister, my brother. The thing that I have enjoyed the most since I came back here has been my relationship with my high school, Bristol Central High School. And we started a program. As soon as I agreed to the deal here, the first thing I wanted to do was, my wife and I wanted to do was, help my old high school English teacher, who had been at Central for 50 years, who was retiring, to create a program that could keep her involved in the school, keep her involved with the students, to have the impact she had on me with another generation. And we just had our dinner the other night. It was actually between games 3 and 4 of the finals. I was in Cleveland. I flew home to Jersey. We came up, we went to the dinner, and I flew back, did SVP, and then flew back in the morning to Cleveland. And we, it was the group of kids we had, it was just tremendous. And they're from the same neighborhoods I grew up in and the same places where my friends hung out. And it's a blue-collar town. And just what a great group of kids who are part of the writing. It's called the Writing Initiative all year. They're going to great colleges. And, you know, just the being a part of that has been awesome. And I have to see their enthusiasm for the opportunities that have been available through this year. And we had some scholarships and some awards that we gave out at the end of the year. Like I just felt better about like the town I grew up in and my school and the future because man, it's been uplifting for me to kind of see through their eyes. And, that's been as fulfilling for me as anything I've done over here.
But there's got to be added meaning every time you drive in from Jersey to Bristol and to know that your family's here, your high school's here, the students that you're helping are here. There's got to be an extra warm feeling that washes over you.
You know, there was a moment my first day here. I was walking across the campus, and it was, I guess, June 30th. It was like I wasn't on it. It was the day before. I guess I was here that day. And somebody grabbed me, an older gentleman, and said to me, you know, everyone always talks about Aaron Hernandez in Bristol. All we've heard about is Aaron here the last few years, or a lot of what we've heard about. I'm glad you came back. I mean, Hernandez, their family grew up, I mean, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, like 4 blocks from where my dad still lives, and I can picture the house. I mean, we went to the same schools, and he went to Bristol Central, and the teachers that I am close with and the principal, Pete Winninger, there, they were close with him. And that really affected this town. It affected my high school. I thought Central took a lot of unfair blame for it. I thought Florida at times tried to put blame on Bristol that probably belonged with them. And in the end, he was accountable, culpable for obviously everything that happened. I always thought Central and Bristol got a little bit of an unfair. Like, Central wasn't some football factory. There had never been an athlete like him. The greatest athlete, it's funny, Malcolm Huckabee, who works at ESPN, who does college basketball, played at Boston College and was in training camp with the Miami Heat a couple times. He was the best athlete ever out of here, and actually it's ironic. He's here, too, now on TV, but I'm defensive about it. I'm protective about it. It's a great town. But I have to drive through Waterbury on my way here, and, you know, I worked in Waterbury at the newspaper there for 4 years. After college, I never thought I was going to get out of Waterbury. And so I always have to drive by the paper on my way here. And I think about that. It's a long, you know, I worked at the Hartford Courant through high school and college. You know, I covered UConn was my first beat. So like when I'm driving on 84 or 91, I think about like, I didn't imagine having, I mean, the job I have now, the job you have didn't really exist when we started. Like they became products of the industry changing. And so, like, I know I'm lucky. Like, I'm lucky to have the opportunity to be here and do this, and I appreciate the climb through newspapers I had.
To make that drive every day and to go through those towns and to see your old familiar haunting spots, so to speak, that's got to be inspiring every time you pass one of them because it's a reminder of how far you've come in the journey. And by the way, I should say this, as I'm doing this, this is what I love. I always feel like when I'm with Woj, it's like looking at a mirror figure because he's looking down at his phone. He's checking. He's answering a text as I'm answering the question. And I don't even have to think that he's not listening because I know he's listening to me because that's how we've trained our minds. It's, you know, it's my wife and my family's criticism. You're not always present. But I know he's present even though he's not necessarily present and he's checking the phone to answer.
Wait, what did you say?
My wife is on me all the time.
No, I'm
about
kidding.
That.
I'm kidding.
Your wife get on you about that?
Of course. Of course. Of course. Yeah.
That's...
Yeah. I've lost all credibility with my kids and the phone. Like, hey, you know, put the phone down, do that. Like, I have no credibility in that area, as nor do you.
I get on my daughter, 9 years old, on the iPad all the time. Hey, get off it.
Yeah, really?
You're always on your phone.
Yeah.
Right?
It's my job. Well, congratulations. Right?
They don't
that doesn't
care.
Work either.
That no. So, so what do you do to solve that situation? You got any advice for me there, Woj?
Well, you know this, and we talk about this a lot, is and it's hard. It's hard to be, we're on call all the time and you have to be responsive all the time. You can't just, when someone's calling or needs have a question answered or information, like you've got to be available to them. It can't be 2 or 3 hours from now. It's got to be now or when you need somebody, like they may not be available to you. And so, as you know, it's a two-way street. And so a lot of our day is spent just talking with people and I know it's the same with you. You might have 30 or 40 conversations with somebody that never have anything to do with the reporting of a story. And when something's happening and it's going down and you're making call number 41, you hope like you're in position to be able to get it. That's the, you know, it's 365 days, literally. And if you're not willing to commit it in that way, it's, you know, it's hard to do it because there's a line down the street and around the corner of people who are willing to do it. And so, but there's no question there's a price to pay with your own family for, you know, as you're maintaining these relationships everywhere else, you better be concentrating on, your most important relationships, which are your wife, your kids, your family.
I can say I've been married to my wife now 11 years this month. We've been together for 12. Our older son was turning 18 years old this week. The son that she had with her first husband who passed away on 9/11. Our daughter is 9. But nobody gets me like you, Oak. And I'll bet I could say the same selfishly and arrogantly about you. As much as you love your wife and your two children, I'll bet I get you as well or better than them.
When I see, I'll see you in the calf and there'll be a look of angst or frustration. I know exactly what it is. We spent, I think it was around NFL free agency. I was up here and I want to say there wasn't a ton going on. And I tagged around with you one morning and I just watched you work. I watched you on the phones, listened to you on the phones, and it was pretty instructive. I've learned a lot of things from you, including have your second phone be with a different carrier, right? So if you have one with Verizon, have the other be with AT&T. And I have found that there are times the text messages are a lot quicker through wonderful. For whatever reason, you're in a bad spot and you look at your phone and you go, wow, that one came in 5 minutes later. That could have been disastrous if it was something really important. So those are the little tips we learn along the way.
Where did the term Woj bomb originate?
I have no idea. I really don't. I saw it, I guess, at some point on the internet, on Twitter. I don't really like it's not a term I use or I'm comfortable using, but I understand other people do, and it's part of the whole, it sort of took on a life of its own. I don't know who coined it or whatever. I mean, but
it's kind of cool.
I don't know its genesis.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like a Woj bomb is more powerful than an atom bomb. You would never think that, right? But an atom bomb doesn't even exist, even though it exists in real life. I've never heard an atom bomb.
ADAM or ATOM?
ATOM. Okay, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got my, whatever the English phrase for that word is, onomatopoeia or whatever. I have no idea. What is that? When you have the meaning of a word that's spelled in another way, whatever that means. I want to thank you for the Woj bomb on John Beilein, keeping him at the University of Michigan. That worked out very
well.
Yeah,
how about that? Yeah, I saw that. Well, you know, you've covered those. When the college coaches get involved in the pro searches.
Sticky.
It is. And the pro guys typically are fine with, there's not a lot of, it's the same group of guys typically that are interviewing for jobs, and assistants usually don't mind their names being involved or having it public, but college coaches have to be a little more deft about it. But I don't think for Beilein, I know sometimes people will, they think it quote unquote hurts recruiting. It doesn't. Like if I'm John Beilein, like it was a benefit that an NBA team and teams, there's been other teams interested in him through the years. There's a benefit that, like I get when you might be talking to another college and you might leave for another school that hurts you. But when your name is mentioned in the NBA, Calipari, I think always loved, while he will.
Credibility.
It is. And it's something you end up selling in recruiting. And well, the NBA wants me, so why wouldn't you want to come play for me? They see me as an NBA coach, or I can prepare you for the league. I think it helps John Beilein. But I get once his name was out there and he was involved, there's only so long a coach of that stature doesn't also want to be in a competition. Whereas Dwayne Casey or an assistant coach from somewhere else, they don't want to be seen as having to compete for the job. They want to be able to have it offered, turn it down, take it, whatever. And so as it lingered a day or two, I think he started to move to exit out of it.
So here's some of the reasons that I'm thankful for you, respect you so much, have such great admiration for you. You help keep John Beilein at Michigan. He's the National Sports Writer of the Year. And you're a senior NBA insider. I've been at ESPN now for 9 years. I don't have a senior title.
You need to get a better agent.
I obviously do.
I don't even know how I got it. I got here and it was on my ID, so I'll take it.
That's a great title. Mort is the senior NFL insider. Okay. I think that may be, and you know what? Listen, I'll defer to Mort every time. I love Mort. And if he wants to have my senior title, he could have it as long as he's here. I hope he's senior for the next 30 years here at ESPN. I'll be the junior in every sense of the word, physical, literative.
I want to tell you, that was a big deal. The first day I walked in the green room and Mort was sitting there. I knew you and we had gotten to know each other prior to me coming here. I didn't know Mort at all, but like, you think of the guys who really paved the way, you know, like he was a sports writer who, you know, Will McDonough, who you knew well, and you came up in the business as one of your idols, you know, his son, Ryan's the general manager with the Suns, and obviously Sean McDonough, who works at ESPN, and Terry McDonough works for the Cardinals in the NFL. But I always, whenever I'm with Ryan McDonough, or we're talking many times, as much as I want to pick his brain about what's going on with the Suns or what he thinks about a free agent or a draft pick, like I love getting Will McDonough stories from him. I love hearing him tell me stories about his father, who was, you know, bigger than life, right? Really a bigger than life figure in our business.
There was a time that I flew into the NFL owners meetings in March in Phoenix, and I was at the baggage claim, and it had to be roughly in the year 1999, 2000, and Will McDonough was standing there. I went over to him, and he said, "Come on, kid, come with me." I said, "Where are we going? We're going to go to the owners meetings together." He says, "Let's get a limo." A limo? He got a limo to take us to the owners meeting. He says, "You want to arrive in style." And we took a 20-minute ride from the airport over to the Biltmore in Phoenix, and I was peppering him with questions the entire time. And, of course, later that year or a year or two later, he helped get me into the Boston Marathon, which is a whole story in and of itself where I almost died and wound up in the hospital with rhabdomyolysis. True story. But he got me in there, and he died that next year. And he was a legend and a titan in the industry and somebody that to this day I still worship and idolize, and I could hear about and read about and never get enough of that particular individual, which is why I'm always so fascinated with Sean McDonough and Terry McDonough and Ryan McDonough and anyone in the McDonough family.
Yeah.
Like, just an unbelievably accomplished family. In fact, I was in Salisbury, North Carolina, where Will McDonough was once honored as the National Sports Writer of the Year, the award that you're going to be picking up and receiving on June 25th. Yet another reason to be very respectful of the great Woj.
Yeah, in fact, when I was 23, 24, when I was working in Waterbury, I had won they have state awards. They still do. And I somehow won the Connecticut Sports Writer of the Year when I was covering UConn and Waterbury. And we went down, my wife and I went down to that weekend. They had this great weekend there. And Peter Gammons was the National Sports Writer of the Year. And I remember I got my photo taken with Peter Gammons. I still have it somewhere at home, but I stood there. You held your plaque and you stop and you pose for a picture with Gammons. And like, hey, listen, I grew up reading the Globe, you know, New England kid, Red Sox fan, Celtic fan. I was a Patriot fan of like Steve Grogan and Sam Bam Cuttingham and that group when I was a kid.
And your son still is.
He's a huge, yeah, he's had a different era of Patriot, of Patriot glory. But like reading the Sunday Globe, reading Gammons, Bob Ryan, obviously Will McDonough, like that's all I ever
Hall
wanted
of Fame
to
sports
do.
Writers.
Yeah, I mean, like there'll never be a group like that together again. And I think of that's all I ever wanted to be was a newspaper writer. Like, I worked at the Hartford Courant and as a part timer. And like, my goal was like, I wanted the University of Hartford basketball beat. I thought you get to make a couple overnight trips to like Durham, New Hampshire, Orono, Maine. They play BU. You get to stay in Boston for a night. Like, I thought, and then in the spring and fall, you would do like local Division III Wesleyan Trinity football or NCAA tournament baseball. I was like, that would be a great job. And you know what? I still really believe if that's what I did, I would have been fulfilled. I never imagined like what this whole thing would become. I just wanted to be that guy, and I would have been happy being that guy.
You know what's funny? I had aspirations to be simply a newspaper beat man. When I got the Denver Broncos beat job, I couldn't have been happier. Wanted to cover the Colorado Rockies when they got there, didn't get the job, was forced to be stuck on the Broncos and NFL beat. And if I had done that the rest of my life, I would have thought there couldn't be anything better than that. And like you, never imagined that these kinds of jobs would exist, that they would grow into what they are today, that we would be as fortunate and blessed as we are to do these jobs. for such a great company and network around such great people. And so, basically, at our roots, we're two East Coast guys who just wanted to report on sports, like sports, yeah. love sports. And here we are today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my dad worked, you know, 10 minutes from here, like at a, the factory's gone. It's called New Departure Hyatt. And, you know, he worked there for 30 plus years in the factory. He sharpened tools. They made ball bearings. You know, like I drive around town and I see like old jobs I had, like working at the cemetery, cutting grass. there used to be a photo mat in the middle of a parking lot, hot, like strip mall parking lot. I worked in the photo mat. I worked like selling shoes in the Bristol Center Mall, which I think is gone now. And so like, one summer I worked at a middle school, Northeast Middle School, as a custodian, and I had to have a razor blade and had to go through every desk in the school and scrape all the gum off the bottom of the desk. I never put gum under a desk ever because somebody has to, don't do that. Mm. Somebody has to scrape it off. And so like, those were all the jobs I had around this town. So like, I don't take this for granted.
Woj, congratulations on all your awards and all your success. Look forward to watching you Thursday night on ESPN's NBA draft coverage. And then again, in free agency, I'll always love that time of the year. I know how important that must be to you. So get ready for that, and thank you for the time today.
Thank you, Adam. It was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it. A special thanks to my friend, ESPN NBA senior insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another Adam Schefter podcast. We'll be back next week with another special guest. And until then, enjoy the NBA draft this week, everybody.